Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 122.
This week on the podcast, the Obama administration casually wonders if we should stop arming our local police forces with tanks. They'll look into it.
And ISIS delusionally believes they might take over India. And hell, why not throw in Saudi Arabia too?
This week on Hillary Pillory, in the face of challenges from fringe isolationist Rand Paul, the DNC assures Americans that we will definitely go to war if Hillary is elected. Whew!
And in other Hillary news, Clinton is headlining the Harkins Steak Fry, a kind of fry that's mysterious even to me, a born and bred Iowan.
Unsurprisingly, a Minnesota anti-gay crusader and GOP congressional candidate knows way too much about gay sex.
And we've got updates on all the most important pop culture events of the week. Jesse Williams and Grey's Anatomy, Taylor Swift, Michael Sam, the Ice Bucket Challenge, and more.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And then find us on social media, because that's where we'll be.
Yep.
Just hanging out on social media. All week. Big news this morning, or yesterday morning if you're listening to this on Monday. Big earthquake.
Oh, no.
In California, where we live.
Not good.
Not where we live specifically, because this was up in Napa and Sonoma.
Yeah. But Are the wineries okay, is my big question.
Will there be enough alcohol to get us through this? It's not clear, because it was a 6.0.
Yeah,
and
huge.
And has not yet been downgraded massively, which is normally what happens, is you wake up and there were like, an 800.0 earthquake struck last night, and then by the end of the day, it's like a 2.0, and you're like, oh, that was just like equivalent of a truck driving by.
Right.
But this was a 6.0 at 3:30 a.m., and a rolling quake, those are terrible.
Ugh,
they
just
make you car sick.
On. I know, and also like, I mean, a 6.0 earthquake never happens at a great time. But who's functioning at 3:30 in the morning?
Nobody.
Because this has happened. The last big one that we had was like 6:30, and at least at that point you sort of like slept through. But even when that shot me out of bed, you're so delirious. Like, you can't know the right thing to do at 3:30 when an earthquake hits that's that big.
My major hope with those is always that I'll just sleep through them, and that my house won't be on fire, but that I will just like wake up and everyone will be like, "Did you feel the big earthquake?" And I'll be like, "No,
no.
I slept beautifully." Now I'm.
I don't think you could have done that with this one.
No, probably, there was one that was relatively large when I first moved out here that I slept through. And all of my neighbors apparently were like screaming in the streets. And I was just peacefully asleep in my bed. And I felt good about that.
Yeah.
I felt like somebody would have woken me up if things had been really dire, but at least.
Yeah, but this is like people were injured, like critical injuries. Like almost 90 people went to the hospital. There's some fires going on that got started.
There's a mobile home park where like something like 6 mobile homes have been burned down and a bunch
of little
damages.
Little smaller fires,
water mains
broke, power outages.
Obviously, And then a bunch of historic buildings in downtown Napa, which is a tourist capital of America.
Well,
so
it's lovely.
Tragic,
it's beautiful.
Were very heavily damaged. The county courthouse among them, and then 2 older commercial buildings. And then road damage. So far, nothing has been reported in like San Francisco. Like, this was the Northern Bay Area. I'm sure they felt it, but it's not like any of their bridges fell down, fortunately, because that's always a big clusterfuck.
They felt it enough to probably be fully panicked, because in San Francisco, they're always waiting for this to happen.
San Francisco is...
Well, so you are in Los Angeles, too.
Right, but in San Francisco, like, I live in a 1-story house in a low-rise neighborhood. Like, an earthquake's not what I'm looking for, but, like, I'm not worried that, like, a massive tower is going to fall on me.
Right.
In San Francisco, you have to worry about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That you don't have to worry about here, because we all live in these low-rise areas. Like, I'm not trying to be in San Francisco during a major earthquake. It sounds like a terrible situation.
Yeah.
So in any case, we hope everyone's okay.
Yeah.
We hope that that's the last big California earthquake for the next 20 years.
We hope it doesn't move down the coast.
Right.
Yeah.
This was the biggest one since that really big one in, what was it? Was it 89 or something? There was a huge earthquake in San Francisco. I remember because I had a friend in elementary school. Not Northridge. There was one in San Francisco as well. I think it was 89. But it was like a 6.7 or something crazy.
Okay.
And I had a friend who moved to New York right after that, and she would show us these pictures that her dad was taking during the earthquake with like her hiding under tables and things like that. And I was like, you guys are crazy.
Come on.
Thank God you moved to New York.
Yeah.
Then they moved away again. And I was like, what are you doing? You finally found safety. So in any case, and Ferguson was calmer this week.
Yeah, I know.
Thank God.
Yes.
It's
very much so. There were some protesters. I mean, they've continued to protest, but they, you know, it's just we haven't
had. There hasn't been like a massive police response. Right.
Military hasn't been enforcing things. And pointing AK-47s at just like random bystanders in the street. And so there were protesters this weekend because it's the coming up on 2 weeks since it happened. So there were like 70 people out in Ferguson, but it was like mostly peaceful. The funeral's tomorrow, so I think there was some general concern that maybe some shenanigans would be going on tomorrow, or, like, leading up to that, but that hasn't seemed to happen yet.
Right.
They drew down the National Guard this week, who had been sent in this last, I think, at the beginning of this week or the end of last week. Yeah. There was a 200-person rally in St. Louis, and that was led by Captain Ron Johnson, who was the Missouri Highway Patrol guy who came in to sort of, like, fix things, basically. He's African-American. And then also the St. Louis County Police Chief, John Belmar, who's white. They led that, or were at the front of that.
I guess a unity rally?
Apparently.
I don't know.
So that was in St. Louis.
Yeah.
So calm is happening there, which is good. Hopefully this calm doesn't lead to us forgetting that
these things need dealt with. Right, that's a specialty of ours.
That's a big specialty of ours. Like
Al Sharpton is speaking tomorrow at the funeral, and I'm sure he'll address that.
Yeah,
because that's what his life is devoted to addressing.
yes, it is.
And there have been rising reports of counter protesters, which is such an annoying thing.
I mean,
don't be a counter protester.
Come on,
don't be.
You can silently
think anything you want.
Think racist thoughts to yourself if you want. But I mean,
you're welcome to have all of the horrible thoughts in your own head that you want to have.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish terrible things to people, too, in my head. But I just try not to say them out loud because I know that at a certain point, I don't want to be known as a person who's thinking horrible thoughts.
Right. Yeah. These people do.
The
counter-protesters.
Yeah. Well, and there's even, like, there was, like, a GoFundMe page to fund the guy who shot him's legal defense and stuff.
Yeah.
This is weird. It's weird to be galvanized by a desire to protect someone who, like, is known to have murdered an innocent person.
Yes.
Like, it's one thing to silently be like, well, people are overreacting. Like, you can think whatever you want, as we said, in your head.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, anytime that there's a news story, like, everyone is overreacting on every side of every news story. So, like, there's room to think that about anything.
Yeah.
It's different to donate to his, you know, to sort of, like, advertise his cause and donate to his cause on social media. And then to be at a protest where you're, you know, trying to...
Well, this is a big thing. People were donating a lot of money to George Zimmerman, too.
Yes, I remember that.
Same sort of situation.
That was so weird, too.
Yeah.
It was like, all right.
Don't do that.
Think a racist thought in your head if you need to, but, like, don't act on it.
Yeah.
That's a terrible plan. Nobody wins when you act on a racist thought.
Yeah.
Nobody. Just putting that out there.
Yep.
That's a rule to live by.
That's it. Also, he's probably not going to need help with a defense fund.
No, he's a police officer. He's got a defense fund. It's not like the police are like, oh, you acted as a police... In your capacity as a police officer, you did something wrong. We don't offer any sort of help.
We're going to leave you high and dry now. No, he doesn't need $100,000 from a bunch of racists for his defense fund.
Because he's a city worker. He doesn't lose his job unless he is proven to have acted outside of the law.
Right.
And he, you know, they were holding up signs that said innocent until proven guilty. And that is true. He is innocent until proven guilty. So... He will have to be proven guilty before they can get rid of him on the police force.
Right, and
he's
I don't
just,
think
like,
that...
walking around just left high, like, with nothing to do and no one to go to. That's not how it works when you're a city of... And it shouldn't be. I mean, I think the police do have a responsibility to sort of offer him a fair defense because he's an employee of the police department.
Everybody should
get
one.
We don't know what happened. That's what everyone in the world should get. That's what the whole premise of our legal system is.
Yeah.
But especially if you're in the line of duty as a city employee, the city should... protect you to a certain degree from just, like, crazy charges being filed against you. But so he's still innocent until proven guilty. Like, the fact that he's sort of being tried by the media is a separate issue that has more to do with sort of the cultural context this is taking place in. This is not, it's not having to do with his legal defense.
Right.
Let's get over yourself.
Speaking of fair trials, which we all have a right to.
He's not about to have one.
Right. In a way that... benefits him.
Right, yes,
Because the grand jury has 3 black people on it and 9 white people on it. So they began hearing evidence on Wednesday that could take until mid-October. This is just to decide whether he even is going to be tried for murder.
Yeah.
Or for anything.
Right. And I bet... I'm going to put this out there. This man's not going to be tried for anything.
You don't think?
No. I don't think so. Okay. I don't think so. I feel like it... There's got to be a way to sort of keep this issue alive. I don't know that necessarily trying a guy for murder is that way anyway. Like, as much as that would be sort of, like, a great vindictive thing to have happen. At the same time that you know, it would be nice if he paid a price for the crime that he committed in murdering an innocent teenager.
Yeah.
I think that that's not really the best way to have, like, a constructive dialogue about this issue, because he was still in the line of duty as a policeman in an area where he was not the only one with sort of racist sentiments. The police force as a whole was responsible here, not him. He's, like, going to be the fall guy for this. And either they're going to forget it happened and not make any changes and be like, that guy was just a bad seed. Or they're going to be like, we have a problem here that needs to be addressed more broadly than this one guy panicking in a situation where he had unnecessarily assumed that all black people were threats because he was like in this world where the whole police force was living according to this, you know,
doctrine that
black teenagers are threats. And that's the problem.
Right.
The problem is not this one guy. It would be nice if we could see some justice in the world, but I don't think we will.
All right, fair enough.
And I don't think that that matters as much as the culture of the police force addressing the problem.
No, I think that
This trial is just going to be a show trial for them, and then they'll be like, see, dealt with it, all done.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not what we need.
Yeah. So the other, obviously, we talked about this last week, the big story coming out of this was the whole, you know, militarization of the police force, and we talked a lot about it last week, and Obama this week has ordered a review of that.
Yes, thanks. So, it was time.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to look at federal programs and funding that sort of, like, you know, allows these state and local law enforcements to purchase this military equipment, which has been, you know, on full
maybe
use
investigate
over the last
whether
couple
they're
weeks.
Being trained or whether well, they need right, any of these
that's
things.
That's another thing that they're going to look at, you know. And he, I think his quote was something, I don't know if I pulled it, but like something about like there's, you know, the lines between the police and the military are becoming too blurred right now. So, you know,
true
and they're gonna,
story.
But it looks like, you know, they're supposedly going to be working in coordination with Congress and like everybody from like, you know, Homeland Security and the Department of Defense and everybody is going to be supposedly looking at all of these programs.
Maybe
that are
they
used,
can
so.
Also investigate why the NYPD had that whole like sting operation being run in New Jersey, which is not in their jurisdiction. They had like an intelligence organization of their own, like a counterterrorism intelligence organization that was like doing raids in New Jersey and things like that, which is not a thing that the local police should be up to. I'm sorry, the New York City police have a lot of responsibilities. I get it. It's a major city. There's more of them probably than there are state police in New York State. I mean, that's a huge police force that's bigger than a lot of state police forces. I get it.
Yeah.
I don't know that they should be operating outside of their jurisdiction without the cooperation of other law enforcement agencies. And I feel like that's another thing that has happened after 9/11 where like police forces have gone rogue in their attempts to stop terrorism. They're just like doing whatever they want to do to stop terrorism wherever they see it striking, even if that's not their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
That's another area I feel like we can investigate as part of this police militarization. Because that's a very militarist. I mean, that's police intelligence services are another sort of bizarre, you know, sort of post 9/11 militarization issue. Yeah. That's a military function as well. That's not. Yeah. That's not what police forces, like, yeah, you want to investigate a murder, you have some informers, blah, 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 I get all of that, but, like, don't be going into New Jersey. That's a terrible
just
plan.
Ever.
Ever. Just don't do it.
Yeah, don't go there.
Meanwhile, on the ISIS front, we had a really horrifying, this is horrifying in a very medieval way that I'm not okay with anything they're up to, obviously.
Right.
But I'm, like, especially not okay with videos of people being beheaded.
No.
Don't have that happen anywhere in the world, ever.
No.
Don't be beheading people.
Yeah. So this week, James Foley, who was a freelance war correspondent from New Hampshire, who had been kidnapped twice,
This is
his second kidnapping. Yeah. But he was kidnapped in 2012, I think.
Or 2011, right? In Libya.
And then held for 44 days.
Right.
And then again in 2012 in Syria.
He'd served in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and Syria. So he was...
He was
in the wrong place.
I was going to say, just by chance, he was going to get kidnapped.
Right. But, he had a higher likelihood of getting kidnapped than anyone else.
He'd been kidnapped in 2012.
Right. In Syria.
In Syria. Correct. And they didn't really know where he was. Although I think that I heard something this week that didn't they actually try to get him? Wasn't there like a U.S. raid to get some of these reporters? Some of these
there was definitely a raid. I don't know if he was the target of the raid.
I think he was actually because I think that's what sort of like sparked that. The people talking about that was unsuccessful.
Didn't work.
But it didn't work. So anyway,
so ISIS releases this video.
Yeah.
Right. That is him on his knees explaining that he's about to be killed in retaliation for the U.S. airstrikes. They use him as sort of like a pawn, you know, in their rallying against the airstrikes that we started in Iraq. Yeah. And then he also addresses his brother John is in the Air Force. And so he's sort of like, and this is very like, obviously he's under duress when he's saying this. He's not like, just like casually talking about this. He urges his brother to reconsider or to consider the ramifications of the bombing campaign.
Right.
And then this militant with a British accent gets on the scene, and says that the airstrikes are denying the rights of Iraqi Muslims to live under an Islamic caliphate. Why can't I ever say that word?
I don't know.
This is the fourth time this week that I've said it out loud
while
reading it and not been able to say it correctly.
This has been a big talk this week about the caliphate because we sort of like have, you know, as this ISIS thing sort of like unfolds, we've learned that that's what their plan is, which is basically to like build the old Islamic State. And
I saw a ridiculous map that they released of their plans.
Oh yeah, it's
got everything. To like take over everywhere.
Yeah, it's all of it.
It was like all of Africa.
Yeah,
they were they were going to be up to like most of Eastern Europe.
Yeah, like, India.
India. I was like, don't think that you're going into India. Like, stop yourself somewhere. Like, there's a billion people in India. Well, and I think
that
slow your roll.
I think that it's these plans that are ultimately going to be their undoing.
Yeah,
because
they're too
big. It's too, you know, India and some of these other countries who are like in Europe and places like that, like, they're not trying to get involved in this. Like,
no.
You can take over Iraq because, as we've talked about,
anyone
can take over Iraq. There's a giant power vacuum, and the military is not good for anything. And there's, you know, it's just sort of like,
it's a
free-for-all
over there.
It's a free-for-all.
Yeah.
But you can't waltz into some of these.
You're not going to waltz into India, which is a country that is not entirely Muslim.
It's, right.
You know, there's a Muslim minority there that is often mistreated at the hands of other people and is sort of... That's what Pakistan is about.
Right. Some of these countries have actual militaries that
will
come to the country's defense when the government calls them to do so, which is not what's happening in Iraq.
Some of these countries have 1 billion people in them and are just, like, too big to pretend you can conquer with this ragtag bunch of people dressed in black. Like, it's crazy.
Although you and I saw those pictures
this
week. Oh, my
God. They are scary looking.
They're more organized than you want them to be.
They are German-style organized.
When you think of some of these terrorist groups, you think of people in sort of, like, you know... shabby clothing,
and
sort
I
of
like
just like waltzing around. Just
to think of terrorist groups in that regard.
They're in matching uniforms. They're like walking in straight lines and marching, and like that's not what you want.
I'm not trying to see that from a militant group at all.
At all.
No.
No, it's not
because
good.
What you can usually count on with a militant group is they're kind of disorganized enough so that eventually they'll break apart because they have competing ideologies and start fighting each other.
Right.
That's what you can usually count on with a militant group. Sometimes they do horrifying things to innocent people. But oftentimes they get bogged down by their own politics and they never really get anywhere.
Yeah. They seem to be really...
ISIS is too organized for my taste.
Yeah.
For the world's taste.
Yeah.
In any case, so this guy who is one of the militants who explains that, you know... The British guy who explains that these airstrikes are denying the rights of Iraqi Muslims is worrying for a number of reasons. One being that he's clearly a British person, first of all, and that means that some of these militants have EU passports, which is not what you want.
Well, there's been a lot of talk of that this week, actually, too, because, like, you know, a lot of the people who have gone over there are people who are European. Americans have gone over there.
Exactly.
You know, so that's...
So that's not concerning.
Great. Yeah.
This guy, the guy who they think it is, they're close to identifying who it was, is a 23-year-old London rapper named Abdel Majid, or Majid, I don't know.
Whatever.
Abdel Barry. He's got a long name.
Yeah. Has Abdel in it twice.
It has Abdel in it twice. That's what we noticed. And his father is Egyptian and was extradited to the U.S. from London after the 2012 bombings.
Right, they were close to Bin Laden.
I mean, because of the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings in Africa, he was extradited in 2012 because he's connected to Osama bin Laden. So Barry had apparently traveled to Syria to go hang out with ISIS and fight people. But he's apparently known... There's a trio of British-born ISIS fighters known as the Beatles. And they're apparently some of the most vicious, they're the most vicious prisoner guards. They had to actually be taken off of guard duty because they were so vicious. And they are apparently, like, have this, like, special little gang that targets kidnapping Westerners and are known as John, George, and Ringo. No Paul. Mysteriously. We were talking about this earlier, and we were like, it's John that I would stay away from. I would stay clear of John in this situation.
Right. Peace, love, and hippie, John.
Yeah.
Like, leave. Yeah. Go with Paul. Not that any of them would be in favor of any of this.
But like
John,
less political than John.
Certainly, right? It's not.
If there was one person, like, you know, who knows what Ringo's up to?
Don't be the John Beetle who's like torturing and beheading.
No,
people.
That's the wrong Beetle to pick.
Yeah.
In any case, they are bragging that they've made millions of dollars in ransom kidnapping Westerners, which they have.
I feel like I also heard this week that they supposedly requested a ransom. For
I don't think
fully
we
before
we don't
which we
pay ransoms.
You know, we don't pay ransoms to you know terrorist groups for things like this. But
so that's
they
but,
tried
but
to
France
get
paid a ransom, I think, to them of like $13 million. Like
oh, shit.
There are some ransoms going on from other places. In any case, then this guy says that there's another U.S. journalist whose life hangs in the balance if we don't sort of correct our path, and that is Stephen Sotloff, who was kidnapped last year in Aleppo. And then another guy who is a prisoner appears in the video, and they think that it's Sotloff, and says, you know, that I will be killed next if things don't change. So this is a terrible thing that is gross on top of being terrible.
Yeah. Oh, God. So obviously that
they don't shy away from extreme imagery on social media.
No,
these guys.
They don't. Well, and that's the other thing too. Like I read something about like how they really sort of, you know, this was also like, you know, the quality of this video was like sort of like uncomfortably good
too. Good.
Like it was very much intended for American audiences. Yeah. Like obviously it was because it was, you know, an American journalist.
In but English, I mean like it right?
was
wasn't it?
They wanted us to watch it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like
it wasn't poor quality audio of a guy in a cave with like echoey weird sounds
right,
and like
exactly.
random no. chickens in the background yeah. or whatever, like
it was like someone who'd gone to film school had done this.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite. I'm being no. a little dramatic. But I mean, like...
No, but it's a guy
another,
with an iPhone,
another thing that you don't
someone
want.
Someone in like, HD
every,
had... A,
everything that they're doing is...
Is something you don't want to see happening.
Exactly.
They are some concerning people.
Yeah, so... and we are concerned about it.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of chatter this week about what the hell we're supposed to be doing
right
now. Because
this
we're,
is sort of unprecedented
we're
because
we're bombing
they're...
them, but like, are we going to send ground troops back in there? Nobody really has an appetite for that.
No.
But like, is that what's necessary? Can we sort of can we eradicate them? Can we figure out what to how
right.
to?
Well, know,
and
we like, have
what,
to sort of
what
like,
do?
We have to sort of figure out how. Like, you know, I think part of what our issue was in Iraq the first time was that we went in unilaterally, which I don't
right.
think we have a taste for doing again.
No.
We certainly don't have a taste
right.
for doing that. But I don't think Americans have a taste for unilateral action again.
No.
And finding a middle ground where we can sort of take a comfortable amount of action with the support of the international community. Because these guys are a threat to everyone
right.
in a way that Saddam Hussein was not.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There should be more, if we decide
more
to go in, there should
support.
Be more of an appetite for international. Because, like, nobody's trying to have them take over, like, all of the old Islamic State and, like, introduce Sharia law and, like, basically just,
no.
like, be running half of Earth. Like, that's, nobody's trying to get
you know
involved in that.
Who's especially not trying to get involved in that, interestingly enough, is Saudi Arabia, the very people that are funding them.
Right.
Saudi Arabia, it's mostly private donations at this point that are funding ISIS,
yeah.
but there a lot of them are coming from Saudi Arabia, and apparently, like, all of these ISIS groups have popped up all over Saudi Arabia, and it's become sort of a concerning power struggle there, because
right.
they're sort of thinking that ISIS might eye out Saudi Arabia as a potential place to go into next, which would be weird, because it would be like eating the hand that feeds you, but also sort of smart, because they're essentially already living under Sharia law there, so they might have an appetite for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's sort of, there's been a sort of increasing amount of attention focused on Saudi Arabia's response because they're starting to get a little concerned that they kind of like created a monster.
Right.
And if Saudi Arabia is concerned about creating a monster, you know that a real monster exists.
Yeah. Like, well, right. Exactly. The other thing that is sort of interesting about this is that because, you know, they're trying to take over these countries, but they are a terrorist group. They are not the country itself. So
right.
you can't just go in if you're America and sort of like start bombing the shit out of Syria, because like Syria is
right. Syria is involved in a civil war right now. That's
right.
why this group exists. Like
so,
it's not like they rule Syria.
I read an article this week about that we're going to be seeing some sort of like interesting bedfellows here, basically,
yes.
because we're supposedly already working sort of like covertly with Assad
right.
in Syria and like giving him information about where some of these
yeah.
You know, the jihadi leaders are located, like in Syria, because we have good intelligence on that.
Exactly.
You know, we're going to have to potentially be working with the people who run these countries that ISIS is going to take over, and
right.
we're not necessarily friendly with all
no.
those people.
Well, and it's going to require cooperation with Iran. It's going to require cooperation with a lot of people we don't like in the, you know, in Syria. We're going to have to talk to Assad and some of his supporters,
right. which
in,
is
which is
Russia.
Yeah, exactly. What I was going to say, which means that Russia is suddenly
because,
involved
because he's helped us there before.
Exactly.
I mean, we needed Putin when we
well,
were trying to get rid of the
chemical
weapons.
Well, he doesn't want this bullshit happening there.
No.
He's fighting his own war. He is a busy guy.
Right. So this just sort of, like, is, again, another reason why you can't just sort of, like, go and, you
this
know,
is why you don't take unilateral action in the first place.
Right.
Is because then suddenly you need Russia, and you're at war with Russia for other reasons, and you
right.
can't cooperate, and then it's like, what happens?
Right, and then they can't help you with ISIS.
Exactly.
I mean, this is all sort of, like,
it's chaos.
Crazy interconnected.
Yeah.
Which is,
which
know.
Is... That's why it's a complicated field, international relations.
Right, exactly. That's why we don't like talking about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Here's what we do like talking about.
Which is good, because we're done now.
Yes. What we do like talking about
is
Hillary.
Come
there was
on.
There was an hour that included reporting on an olive oil store having all of their bottles broken, and you were like...
I was like, that's a uniquely, like, you
San
know,
Francisco problem to have.
Napa and San Francisco problem. I was like, all of my relatives in Iowa are like, a whole store for olive oil? What the hell? That's a... What?
Right,
anyway,
yeah.
So
there's people doing over there.
I know. But
yes.
Anyway, so he was, of course, talking about 2016, because whenever you're interviewing Rand Paul, you have to ask him about 2016.
Right.
And he said what you and I have been saying
yeah.
a lot, is that he thinks it's going to be interesting if he's going to, he says it's going to be a transformational election if the Democrats nominate a, quote, war hawk like Hillary Clinton, which is absolutely right.
Yeah.
Because we, it's, you're going to see a lot of, I think,
it's going to be a confusing one.
It's going to be a confusing one. He said, I think that's what scares the Democrats the most, is that in a general election were I to run, there's going to be a lot of independents and even some Democrats who say, you know what, we're tired of war. We're worried that Hillary Clinton will get us involved in another Middle Eastern war because she's so gung-ho.
True story.
Bingo. Nailed it. Again.
Right. That's...
Nailed it.
Rand like, Paul. Stop nailing it, Rand.
I know.
Stop it.
Luckily, he did stop nailing it. We'll get to that
in a second. First, we want to talk about what the DNC response to this was.
This is annoying.
Which was the wrong one.
Oh, God.
They picked an answer. They went with an answer that was not the right answer.
Right. They had to say something.
Right.
In defense of Hillary Clinton, who's not the candidate for anything.
Right.
So, like, the DNC could have just stayed out of it.
DNC could have stayed out of it. Well, yeah, they first of all definitely could have stayed out of it. Because, like, what is Rand Paul on Meet the Press suddenly requiring
response? And why do they need... Yeah, they don't need to come
to
her
defense.
They
don't need to comment on... No, exactly. Second of all, if they were going to get involved, they could have said anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else. Because here's what they said. They said they're ready to debate him on his, quote, fringe isolationism that would end all aid to foreign allies, including Israel.
Through Israel.
Period. Like...
That's it? You're going to come to the...
Here's what that response says to me.
In current times, you're going to come to the aid of Israel after knowing what's been going on, and, like, that's your response to, like, Rand Paul,
like,
his foreign
policy?
Like,
that's a response that says, like, all I hear in that response is, yes, we will bring you back to war. Like, that's the only, that's the response that they gave.
That's it.
Is he was like,
they
you know, it scares them because people don't want to go to war, and they were like, yes, we do. So, that's a problem for everyone.
Yeah.
And a problem, I think, especially because... This makes me concerned that the DNC really is as hawkish as Hillary.
Yeah, if you're a spokesman for the DNC, you cannot call Rand Paul a fringe isolationist.
No.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Because half of our party are fringe isolationists.
Exactly. I'm on board for that. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Like, after the last decade that we've had, everyone's ready.
Yeah.
Decade, 20 years, 30 years. I mean, that we're ready. For that.
Yeah.
Fringe isolationism sounds awesome.
Yes.
But especially don't call out a nation that is, A, very controversial within your own ranks at the moment.
Yeah.
Israel is not on good terms with a lot of Democrats at this exact moment. And this is the first time in history that that's true.
Right.
So don't make that mistake right now. Second of all, that's like just saying the word war over and over and over again. Like, all that says is war.
Yeah.
You know? And when we talk about foreign aid, they turned it into military aid. Like, they started on the right track being like, he wants to end all foreign aid. And, like, I don't want to end all foreign aid. I want people in Africa to eat.
Yeah.
You know? It, like, what I want to end is military aid to everywhere in the world.
Right.
And that is what they turned that point into.
Yep.
They are the worst.
Ugh.
Democrats.
You really got it wrong.
Though. Why do you do things?
Yeah. Now, on a related note.
Rand Paul is also the worst.
You and I talked about this specific story earlier in the week because I found it and I was like, thank God.
Yeah.
Because I have been liking him way more than I'm comfortable with. And I realize all of the things that, you know, make him crazy. Like, I get it. I'm not delusional about, like, his insanity. But, like, everything that he has sort of, like, at least publicly been saying recently has been sort of, like, on the right track about some of the big issues that he has been focusing on. I understand.
Like, you're not going to vote for him.
You're not concerned
that he is, like, a good person.
No. But he's been doing too much sense talking.
A lot of sense talking.
But finally this week got back to some nonsense talking, which was what I was looking for.
Yes.
I was needing to remember what he stands for.
Yes.
And this week he got to it because he was on a medical mission in Guatemala doing eye surgeries.
So he's in Guatemala. Picture that scene.
Right.
First.
I mean, it's good that he's there and that he's doing that. But as we tell you this story, remember that he's in Central America. Because what he decided to take on at this point was an interview with Breitbart News, by the way, which, no.
Not a news source.
Air quotes news.
Yeah.
Decided that he wanted to overturn
the Dream Act. Yeah.
So in Central America, he decides that DACA, you know, the Deferred Action for Child Arrivals, which is the
unilateral Dream Act.
Right, exactly. He's in favor of legislation to overturn that.
Yeah. So that's lovely. Thank God he's back on track.
Yes.
I've been very concerned about...
I know.
Well, and I think, you know, this is good news also because one of the issues with his isolationism is it's an isolationism that maybe doesn't take into consideration the variety of ways that people come to America, like what America really is. It's one thing to not want to get involved in a war in the Middle East. It's another to pretend like we're not a nation of immigrants.
Right.
And I think that it had been hard because we were so in favor of not going to war.
Yeah.
To remember that he also isn't in favor of people coming here.
Yes.
And like, we are in favor of people coming here.
Yes.
And not going to war. We're right. in favor of all of those things.
Yeah.
And he's only in favor of one of them.
Yeah.
So at least we can remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's going to be a big issue in this election because we don't have immigration reform. We have right. all this, you know, we have this thing going on at the border. And we have states in, especially in the South and Southwest, that are becoming massively, you know, like overrun with Latino voters.
Right. If his answer to the immigration problem is to restart deportations of minors who have lived here for all
then,
their
lives, say goodbye then God to bless Arizona, him. Say goodbye to Texas. Like, yeah, there's I mean, a bunch of states that he can say goodbye to.
He'd been starting a winning strategy.
Yes.
And he's now starting a losing
abandoned
strategy.
Abandoned that strategy. Right,
which is good.
Thank God.
I would like him to pick back up with the losing
strategy. Well, because
strategy.
We were talking, I mean, an election between him and Hillary Clinton is a very confusing election.
Yes.
Because he really is the sort of most populist candidate in that election.
Right.
And he is in favor of these specific things, and he is talking about these specific issues that a lot of Democrats really are on board with. And, like, I don't think anyone would sort of, you know, no base voters are going to be fooled by his nonsense or whatever, but, like, no one's going to be enthusiastic about Hillary.
No.
We're going to want to talk about a lot of the issues that he wants to talk about to right. challenge her.
And he can and fool some enough idiots to win an election.
Idiots. Yeah. That's a man who could fool idiots.
Yeah.
He's an idiot himself. He could fool other idiots. He's right. got weird,
he knows
crazy
how to
eyes.
Do it. He knows he how knows to talk to him.
How to talk to idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a concerning situation.
Yeah.
Which is why we urge Democrats to reconsider
the Hillary.
Their gung-ho pro-Hillary is right. an you know, yeah. inevitable candidate nonsense.
Exactly. Luckily, there are some
non-Hillaries going to Iowa.
They're also not the right choice.
No.
Sadly, the right choice, I told you this, Elizabeth Warren
not,
disavowed the
right.
Ready for Warren people because we this were really excited about that.
This Granted, is the worst news that I've heard all week.
I know. Anyway, but she's not there anyway.
No.
But the people who are there are not the right people. But anyway,
no.
Jim Webb was there, who's a senator from Virginia, and I don't really think that he understands the assignment.
No.
Because if he's sort of testing the presidential waters, he went there and decided to run a Republican campaign mm-hmm. against President Barack right. Obama, who's not, can't run again in 2016, and is also the current president of your own party.
Right. It's not one of the great plans that he's come up
it's
with.
It's not the best strategy.
Well, when I read this, I turned to Brent and I was like, I thought he was a Democrat.
No, he is.
Yeah. He's a Democrat who yeah. just... Self-loathing Democrat.
Yeah, he was at the Iowa Federation of Labor's annual conference, which is like a big gathering in Iowa. It's like got a lot of, this article calls them
Democratic opinion leaders. Here's, it has union people at it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's who's at a labor
right.
council
so,
meeting.
I mean, this is also a cautionary tale of knowing your audience,
yes,
I think, basically.
Exactly.
Because he went to the labor union leaders and said, the president's use of executive authority has gone way too far from the legislative branch. It certainly is outside all precedent, and the Congress should have stepped in. Wait, what?
How were they going to do that? How does he suggest that they accomplish yeah. that?
Well, he's in it.
They couldn't step in.
Right.
I mean, they tried to step in by repealing Obamacare 50
right.
times, but they,
yeah.
that was their only step so far.
He's a member of
the problem.
The body that he is asking to step in.
Yeah. So that seems like something he would yeah. have a better audience to
yeah.
discuss with.
And then he would also, of course, had to, you know, when you're running for president, you have to have a laugh line. And
yes.
I don't know if this is the right one or
it's
not.
It's not a funny laugh line.
No.
So that's
but he said, I'm
he
the only person
for.
Elected to the United States Senate with a union card, 2 purple hearts, and 3 tattoos. Oh.
Hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That's... Well,
anyway. I bet that senators are not big tattoo havers.
Probably not.
It's a pretty sedate body
yeah.
of people.
Yeah.
And I like it that way.
Yeah. Amy Klobuchar is
also there.
Who's from Minnesota. She's been there
all up and down.
Up and down.
Well, she's
been there like 3 or 4 times. She's from Minnesota. So she can just pop over the border.
Yeah, it's not that hard for her.
No. Yeah, exactly. But she was there at least sort of doing the right things
yeah.
because she was talking about minimum wage and she was campaigning for
Bruce Braley,
who's
the terrible Democratic candidate.
Right,
for...
who's in a real yeah. Senate fight with Joni Ernst, who also, we haven't talked about this, but claims she was abused in the military. Did you see this?
No.
It's a new story this week. So she's trying to ride that gravy train.
Joni Ernst.
She's awful. But anyway, at least she was talking about the minimum wage.
Right.
Now, she's also sort of like one of these people who is like just sort of there until Clinton decides
yeah.
that she's running.
Because she's a placeholder.
She has... declared already that she's going to support Clinton, which is not the right choice. But,
no.
like, she's just sort of, like, going to be there. She's going to be there until Clinton kicks her out.
These are the exact actions of people who are involved in a mafia. I was saying
yeah.
this to Brent. I was like,
yeah.
it's a little alarming to me that all of these very competitive political types have all been like, well, I'll be here, but if Clinton steps in, all bets
right,
are off.
Right, yeah.
Because they're scared of the Clintons, because the Clintons command the entire, like, Democratic money machine, yeah. basically. Like, it's alarming to be in a situation where you feel like somebody has that kind of pull over other independent yeah. candidates who could, who are just as qualified, you know?
Right.
But Clinton herself is heading there.
She's going there because she's headlining the Tom Harkin steak fry, which is like, I put in the notes here, I was like, that is not a thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Tom Harkin is doing it. I don't know what a steak fry is. It's not a thing that Iowans are just like going around and having steak fries. I don't know what that involves. He has it every year, but if you're thinking that Iowans are like doing things,
if that's like a traditional, like a folksy Iowan thing to do.
It's not anything that I've ever heard of, other than in regards to like this thing that Tom Harkin has every year.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she's going there. The other thing about Iowa that I think that like these people who are going there would be right to remember is that the Clintons don't have a great history in Iowa.
No.
Bill Clinton lost there in 92. Granted, he was running against Tom Harkin, who was sort of like the hometown favorite. But Hillary had a real bad run of it there. Obviously, she lost. But, like, she lost in a sort of dramatic way because she could never really connect with voters there. And there was also that whole sort of, like, notion about whether she was, like, going to leave there. Do you remember this? Like, that was
right, big. They almost abandoned ship.
That was dramatic. They almost jumped ship and just, like, focused everything on New Hampshire. And then people sort of, like, got really pissed that, like, she would even think about doing that because... So, they are not loved enough there that should she decide to run, it's a slam dunk for her in Iowa. And being the first state can, if you win and you're not the Clinton, can really sort of like get you going,
as we know,
which happened in 2008. So I don't think these people are, I don't really love Amy Klobuchar, but if I were her, being from Minnesota and being another woman and running for president in a state that maybe doesn't like the person who everyone thinks is going to be the candidate, I don't know that, like, why bother pulling out and then supporting her? Like, that's a dumb move.
No.
Like, try and beat her.
Yeah, obviously. If you don't beat her in Iowa, then do what you're going to do.
And drop out.
Yeah, but, like, don't give up your one bet here.
Right.
Like, that's any random person who's vaguely as qualified to be president could potentially win Iowa. Iowa's up for grabs.
Yeah.
That's why it's an exciting first state. It's
yeah.
a terrible first state, in my opinion, but that's why it's exciting to watch what's going on over there.
But everybody's going.
Everyone's going. Martin O'Malley's been there. Yep. Brian Schweitzer, who's on the anti-Clinton, anti-Clinton's tour. Brian Schweitzer's also terrible, but I'm excited that he's just made this, like, the corner piece of his campaign is just, like, we can't have a dynasty. No more Clintons.
Oh, and he's folksy enough to play there.
Oh, yeah. He's wearing a bolo tie.
For
God's sakes.
Lord.
Bernie Sanders has been there.
Yeah, he's going to be there doing talks and speeches and stuff, like, while she is doing the steak fry.
The steak fry, yeah.
So he's, like,
that's exciting
doing some sort of, you know, competition.
I'm excited about it.
Direct competition.
Excited about that.
Alternative programming.
Alternative programming, yes.
So, anyway.
That's speaking of women, a little bit of drama at the DNC's Women's Caucus.
I mean, this is just...
Apparently, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Nancy Pelosi went head-to-head with competing candidates to be the head of the Women's Caucus, the chair of the Women's Caucus.
Yeah.
But it's sort of exciting because it's not that exciting of a story. Politico really overdramatized it. It was more exciting because it turned out that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is just, like, desperately trying to get rid of the woman who's been chairing this caucus for, like, a while now, who's a friend of Nancy Pelosi's.
Right.
And Nancy Pelosi was sort of like, yeah, I guess you can use my name.
Right. Like, she already ran her out once.
But she's already ran her out once, and then
had to bring her back because
Secretary Emeritus.
Yeah.
So the woman that she's trying to run out is Alice Germond, or Germond.
Right.
I don't know how to say her name.
Germond.
She's she's the wife of a famous political columnist.
Uh-huh.
But she's a longtime friend of Pelosi's, and she was one of the leaders of the California Democratic Party long ago. So her and Pelosi go way back.
Yeah.
But Wasserman Schultz has Lottie Shackelford, who is the vice chair right now of the DNC and has been for a long time and used to be the mayor of Little Rock, who she was trying to put up for the job. But apparently it's not tense in that, like, Wasserman Schultz and Pelosi are, like, fighting each other.
That
would be fun. But there's a bunch of party activists that are really pissed about how close this race was because they essentially think that everyone should just it should be like a consensus vote or something.
Right.
Like, we shouldn't have any competition within the party.
Why does everybody have to be fighting about this in a way that's, like, making it dramatic?
Right.
Yeah.
But also, it's sort of exciting to me that they are. I hate when they suggest that as a political party, they shouldn't have political processes happen within the party.
Yeah.
Like, you're a fucking political party. You don't need to choose everyone just based on consensus.
Right?
That was what Chuck Schumer was suggesting we do with Hillary Clinton. And, like, obviously, no.
That's not a great...
That's not the plan.
Not the plan.
You're a political party. You should, as you... buy into the idea of democracy on the national stage, you should be willing to accept democracy within your own ranks.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was annoying. In great news for Democratic politics.
Yeah.
There's a hilarious, or potentially hilarious, House race going on in Minnesota right now. Jim Hagedorn, who's the son of a retired congressman, had like a surprise victory in the GOP primary.
Yes.
And it turns out he's a nutbag.
Got some real baggage.
Oh my God. So he's running against a four-term incumbent, and the district that they're in went to Obama, but only by 2 points.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a half-and-halfy kind of district.
Yeah. He used to have an old blog called Mr. Conservative. Yes. And he tried to get rid of it.
He tried to erase it, but the Internet Archive makes that impossible.
The Internet. No. Sadly. Yeah, so it was unearthed by some, you know, like, liberal blog in Minnesota. Right. And it's got some gems.
Amazing.
Just perfect things. Yeah, exactly.
The bulk of the attention got focused on its comments about women.
Mm-hmm.
And gays. Yeah. It refers to Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray, Democratic senators from Washington, as undeserving bimbos in tennis shoes. Harriet Myers he writes in 2005 that she was nominated to, quote, fill the bra of Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. He calls Sarah Palin hot.
Oh, yeah.
He needs to do that because he's so obsessed with gay sex that he has to talk about
And I'm going to talk specifically about one of his comments about gay sex coming up that gives me pause.
Yes, but yes. Anyway. He also, obviously, is on the Obama is Kenyan train.
Sure. You can't have a conservative blog and not be on that train.
One of his quotes is, turns out half Aunt Zaytuni is an illegal alien from Kenya who has illegally contributed money to her half-nephew's campaign, which should make Americans half-pissed. The migration from Barack Obama's second country to the United States during the next 4 years is going to look like a low-budget remake of Eddie Murphy's hit comedy, Coming to America.
If only.
If only. Right? There was a lot more dancing in that movie than I recall being just happening in life. So, in any case, on to his comments about gays, of which there are many, because he's obsessed with gay sex in a very kind of graphic way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what sort of, like, is, I mean, like,
this is the hallmark of the weird conservative GOP
gay exactly, obsessed. Because, like,
it's like, I mean, the Santorum style.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are a lot of Republicans who are sort of, like, you know, love to use, like, gay slang, and, like, you know, like, this guy, he called former Wisconsin Senator Herb Kohl, he called him, like, an alleged switch hitter and a packer. Like, those are all terms that, like, the entire world sort of, like, knows are, like, terms that you would use about, like, someone who was gay if you were going to, like,
if you were in junior high school.
Packer or whatever. Like, if you were...
These are not terms that are in common usage with anyone except conservative bloggers.
Right. But, like, here's another one. Because he was talking about...
Mike Taylor,
who was the target of a homophobic attack ad during his campaign against Max Baucus. He said, the ad really bent Taylor over with rage and caused him to go straight to the bar and get lubricant. It's like he's writing a novel. It's like the 50 Shades of Grey, basically.
Yeah.
Go to the bar and get lubricated. It must have taken all Taylor's power to refrain from fisting or using his fists on Max Baucus, or at the very least, ream him inside and out. All right, let me talk about this for just a second.
Please do.
I'm not going to get graphic about fisting, because that's not what we're here for.
No.
But fisting, as far as I am aware as a gay man, is not a thing that is being talked about in the straight community in a way that, like, if you were just a straight old Republican person, you do not know about fisting unless you have an extreme love of gay sex, or at least knowledge that you shouldn't have as
You've
a straight person.
Research
You've done
on
research
gay
on gay sex.
Yeah. You haven't just come out into the world knowing very little about gays and hating them anyway.
No.
You've gone through the trouble of finding out lots of weird side things that gays are into.
Right.
Because this is like a sort of subculture. It's not like a...
Right. Gays aren't just, like, going out on a Saturday night and just, like fisting each other.
No.
Like, at the bar. Like, that's not what's going on.
No.
So, for you to know about that, you really had to get down to it.
Yeah. You had to do some work to find out about that.
God.
So that's...
Anyway.
Yeah, but he's a man who is obsessed with gay sex.
Yeah,
a la Santorum.
Rick Santorum, right.
Yeah. This is a common theme with these super conservative, crazy bloggers who think they're being hilarious.
Yeah.
They start with the sort of, like, juvenile, like, middle school gay jokes.
Yeah.
And they progress into, like, some very graphic commentary on the nature of gay sex that people in the regular world community aren't talking about.
Right, exactly.
And if you lived in a place where you hated gays, and so you didn't really know any gays, and you don't hang out around gays... These are not things that should have come up in conversation ever.
No. Never. Not once.
It's not a topic to talk about.
Yeah.
And so, in any case, he has a bunch of gay or homophobic slur quote speeches that he delivers. He also likes to make jokes at the expense of Native Americans, which is a fun one. No one's won more in life than the Native Americans. They really deserve to be knocked down a peg, you know? Those Native Americans just up there with their poor quality of life and terrible addiction issues and all the other things that accompany living on reservations.
But this whole...
having genocides committed.
They had...
They've had other hilarious crazies crazies running in this district before.
Right.
Walt, who's the incumbent there in 2012, ran against this guy, Alan Quist, who crafted a school science curriculum contending that humans coexisted with dinosaurs.
Oh, that's another classic.
And then there was another guy who ran against him at the district nominating convention but lost in the primary, Aaron Miller, who was an Iraq war vet and said that he was motivated to run for office because his daughter had been forced to learn evolution in the public schools.
Oh, God. Well, that's not what you want
at all. So this is a long... term issue in this district where apparently poor quality education about the nature of evolution and other issues has led to just like people with a lot of time to talk about gay sex and people with very little information about anything else. In any case, Sinkhole Radio returns to report to you right now that there is an alarming like crack in Mexico that is like a mile long,
a fissure
that is a mile long and 15 feet wide.
And 30 feet deep.
And 30 feet deep. That just split a road in half.
Yeah, nobody knows why.
No one knows why.
Yeah. The locals found it.
As they would.
Also, right, because it split a road in half.
Right.
Also...
that's a one you'd find.
You would find that.
Yeah.
Now, there's video of this happening from a drone.
Right.
Which is
another
concerning.
Weird thing.
Also, in my brain, like, I go straight to the conspiracy theory.
That's more fun That's the more fun theory.
Being an X-Files watcher.
Sure.
But, like... granted, I know the drones are basically, like, filming everything, but why were drones filming something, like,
A geographical event that was just about to happen.
Right?
Like, why did they know?
That's where my brain goes, which is a crazy thing. Like, that sounds like something, like, Alex Jones would say or something.
Yeah.
I realize that, but I don't care.
Why care? What do you lose by not caring?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But they also, no cause for alarm, based on no information. They have no idea what caused it.
They decided not to worry about
it. It's not seismic activity, they said...
That's what concerned me. I was willing to buy that there was a crack in the earth because of seismic activity. We have earthquakes in this area.
Yeah.
I get it.
Well, Mexico has a ton.
Mexico is having earthquakes left, right, and center.
Yeah.
And we're very close to Mexico, and we have earthquakes. I would buy any sort of seismic activity explanation for this. What I didn't like is that they said that's specifically not what it was.
I know. But then the head of the Geological Institute said there's no cause for alarm.
No.
I think there might be.
I'm alarmed. What we don't know... is what caused a giant fissure in the road. That's an alarming circumstance to be in. I'm just saying.
I agree.
And now we move on to the part of the podcast where we've run out of news to discuss and are just going to talk about pop culture.
Yes.
How exciting.
We decided that we were going to do this because we were sort of like, well, the news was on the lighter side of things.
On the lighter side,
it was
sort of depressing.
And there's some good pop culture news.
Some great pop culture news.
Yeah, so we're going to do it.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
First up, something about sports.
Yes. I'll lead the charge on this one.
I'm not going to have anything to add to this.
Right. So, preseason football is almost over. Football starts next week. Also,
I was going to say, fantasy drafts are happening.
Yep.
It's the worst time of year for me.
So, but Michael Sam yesterday sacked Johnny Manziel, who, and like the internet
person
like,
I've never heard
exploded.
Of.
He is the Johnny Football. He was one of the first quarterbacks taken. He was taken like 17 in the draft. And he sort of is like, he may play... for the Browns, I don't think he's going to start, but, like, they're not great, and so they drafted him as sort of, like, their next great quarterback or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really loved by the people. He has already been fined in the preseason because he flipped off the opposing bench
in a
game, like, last week. He's just sort of, like, a known asshole. Like, that's sort of his shtick, basically.
Yeah.
He's good.
Yeah.
Like, he had a great college
good
career,
player.
Whatever. But Michael Sam got right to him yesterday, pretty early in the game, and took him down, and it was just sort of, like, people were already sort of, like, making a big deal that those two were going to be matched up against each other because it's a good story.
Right.
So the fact that we got that was good and everybody, it was great.
Everyone's happy about that.
Seeing him really hit him and take him down to the ground was pretty awesome for most everyone, even people who don't love Michael Sam. I think pretty much people were in favor of
Johnny Manziel
him sacking Johnny Manziel. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so there you go. But it almost like broke Twitter yesterday because people like,
I somehow didn't notice.
No one that you're following on Twitter posted one thing about this.
No.
Not a one.
I can confirm that that's true, because it was not that I did not check Twitter yesterday. Right. It was that I did not find out about this happening.
Fair enough.
Sometimes I see like trending topics on Twitter and I'm like confused as to how nobody that I know is commenting on them whatsoever.
Right. Yeah.
This was one of them. In Grey's Anatomy updates.
Well, it's been too long since we've had it's been off the air.
It's not on the air, so we don't have anything to share.
But we could have updated a while ago because Gina Davis is going to be on.
Gina Davis is going to be on it. That's good news.
That's super good news.
Other good news is that Jesse Williams of Grey's Anatomy fame is turning out to just be like an American hero.
Yeah.
He's been called to comment on the Ferguson situation repeatedly. Now, I don't know why anyone would have any reason to think that he had anything specifically to share about this issue.
Right.
But he, like, schooled an anchor.
Yeah, on CNN.
On CNN. Think,
which probably wasn't hard, but
probably wasn't.
Still,
but no, it's...
He did it anyway.
He did
so
it.
Bless his heart.
No one else did it. He was the one who did it.
Yeah.
So he's suddenly become, like, this hero of the Ferguson situation.
But he used sort of, like, a lot of, like, really strong speech. I mean,
yes.
he sort of was,
no,
like...
No, he spoke
was, like,
really eloquently on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really eloquently, and also just sort of, like, you know, he was like, well... Police officers have been killing, you know, young African-American kids for decades. I mean,
right.
he really sort of wasn't...
Yes.
He didn't mince it. He spoke eloquently,
yeah, he
but
spoke
he also
directly.
Did not mince his words
yeah.
at all. He sort of was pretty forceful.
All of this led to an article in the Washington Post asking if he's the next Harry Belafonte, which I feel like he should take as the biggest possible compliment that a human being could take. It's maybe an overblown commentary.
Yeah.
Because we've just seen... It's just been a couple days that he's been in the spotlight for this.
Yeah.
And Harry Belafonte had a long history of activist work, but... It was sort of exciting to see someone from our beloved Grey's Anatomy stepping up.
And the hot one.
And the hot one. At that. Not even just a rando person from Grey's Anatomy.
Lila
a hot
has
person.
Already concocted a plan as a person who knows Harry Belafonte.
Yes.
I mean, not knows, but I mean like
has met Harry Belafonte.
Right. She has an in with Jesse Williams.
I'm going to tell an anecdote. If I ever meet Jesse Williams, I'm going to have an anecdote about Harry Belafonte ready.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be yet, because so far the anecdote is just meeting him.
Right.
But...
Yeah, just make up a story.
I'm going to make up a story.
Yeah. Said something really...
Harry Belafonte was how...
stuck with you forever.
Was how my involvement in Cuba started.
Yeah.
Because it was a Harry Belafonte concert that was the first thing that I ever worked on at the Center for Cuban Studies, where I used to work.
Yeah.
And that's how the whole Cuba thing took off.
Yeah.
So I went to this Harry Belafonte concert at Lincoln Center after leafleting for them.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of...
Yeah.
Years of me taking bizarre trips to Cuba.
Yeah.
In any case, so that was exciting news.
Yes, it was.
In hilarious, sad but hilarious news, the VMAs are they're tonight, and they're stuck in just like a permanent cycle of 1996. Suge Knight got shot at a pre-VMA party today.
Right.
Suge Knight.
You and I both sort of were...
I'm surprised he's alive.
I was going to say, our initial response was... Hadn't he been shot dead already,
right.
basically? I mean, which Shug, is
this is not sad. The first time he's been shot at a party for the VMAs, I believe.
It's not funny.
That's
Sorry.
Not funny, but...
It
it's,
is, but it's not.
But, like, this is, like, a real echo of 96, which was the year that Tupac and Biggie had their respective VMA and other award show-related run-ins. Suge Knight, first of all, what is Death Row Records doing these days?
Right?
Are they there? Do they exist?
I don't know.
Is that what Dr. Dre is... recording for?
So.
Is he? Exists? Like, nobody knows anything. I'm surprised that Suge Knight was invited to a VMA party, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And once he was there, I'm surprised that there's anyone left with the desire to shoot him. Like, haven't all of those people been shot? Like, it's just such a confusing return to the time of gangster rap being a thing that people were shooting
it is,
each other.
It's not.
Rap at this point is so mainstream.
Yeah.
This kind of nonsense is not really going on anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's going on in weird, isolated parts of the rap community, but like, if Kanye West is not getting shot, and he's kind of comes off as a jackass, then like, I don't imagine that there's like a community of people shooting rappers anymore.
That's what I would have thought too.
But apparently Suge Knight, P.S., should stay away from these VMA parties for his own safety.
Right?
The VMAs are not a safe place for Suge Knight.
No.
He's okay.
They're not a safe place for Iggy Azalea either.
Oh my God.
Who fell off the stage. Was
it's
that a rehearsal, or was that
was
like a...
It was like a pre... It was like a charity event, a pre-VMA, like, charity event or
and
something.
And, like, hilariously just sort of, like, stepped
like,
and
toppled
went,
right
fell,
off
like,
the stage.
Straight down. Like, she didn't sort of, like... It was just, like, she was there, and then, like... It was like she fell through a trapdoor, basically. Like, she just, like, stepped one, two, many steps to the side, and then
it's
was, like...
a hole opened up in the ground.
Yeah.
It's a funny GIF, whatever they're called, to watch.
Who knows?
Nope. I gotta learn at some point. Everyone's saying it differently. It's
hard
to know.
I was gonna say, I think there's a debate about
there's
this.
There's a debate
there?
About this, yeah.
Yeah.
Just as there's a debate about how many spaces to leave after period.
It's
this is
two.
An ongoing... Like, I get that, like, there are grammar you know, grammar Nazis who want you to have it be one because modern typefaces now account for the fact that, you know, it was hard to read in monospace fonts.
People have been having this argument on Facebook, and I have done just some personal experimentation, just like at work in emails or
whatever.
It
looks better to have two.
You have to have two.
It looks better.
Or else it just looks like...
It's hard to read otherwise.
It just looks like letters sort of like...
I'm
smattered together.
I'm not afraid to be wrong if it means that I have easier to read emails.
I concur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everyone learned two in school.
Yeah.
We're both the children of teachers. Like, this, right. The education system is teaching two.
Yeah.
And once the education system is teaching two, it becomes correct.
What's it harming everyone to, like, put the extra space... Like, is the extra keystroke on the space bar just really, like...
Ruining lives?
No, it's not.
No, it's not ruining lives
just
at all.
Just hit it.
Hit it twice. It's easier to read for everyone.
God.
For God's sakes, people.
Lord.
It's like every 3 years this return, like Slate writes a new article about it or something, and it returns as a debate.
Yeah.
And everyone gets really incensed the way that you and I were incensed when we were talking about quotation marks.
Right, quotation marks.
Inside and outside of punctuation.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
Turns out everyone does that differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I guess they do with this period situation too, but it's a complicated situation. Other complicated situations have arisen for Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
A person that we love to hate.
And for me.
And for Brent. This has been a really tough week for Brent.
Oh, my God. I mean, I hate her.
Brent has a long history of hating Taylor Swift.
I attempted to not listen to any of her last songs.
Yeah.
And I did it for a really successful
amount
of time.
For a long time, you had that
going. Yeah,
this? I do.
Because it was whatever song that was.
Some
that was,
dumb
like, annoying
song about
and it had the dubstep in it.
Breaking up with
it,
yeah.
It was too ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I was like, I just don't like her. I don't like the sight of her. She annoys me.
Sure.
But I was having to come to her defense on multiple occasions this week, and I was not excited about it. Also, I like that fucking dumb song, and that annoys me.
It's really annoying.
It's a pop song, though, so I'm sort of at least
writing
it off.
You're not liking
a
country
like a dumb
pop song.
Max Martin wrote it. It's like
It's a Britney Spears song.
It's a Britney Spears song that Taylor Swift is doing. So I'm handling that aspect of it as gracefully as I possibly can.
Of course.
But she's been catching a lot of flack this week.
A ton.
For various different things. Firstly, someone sent me an article about, like, people ragging on her and, like, people tweeting photos of her, like, from the video because, like, she released it as a live stream and it was on Monday and it was, like, there was some crossover time when Obama was doing his sort of, like, live discussion about, like, what was going on in Ferguson. And it was as if
that
they want...
that Taylor Swift is timing her video releases to coincide with presidential speeches... Or to not coincide, to even consider presidential speeches, you are mistaken about Taylor Swift's audience and also what Taylor Swift is up to.
Right. Like, what do you want her to do? Was she supposed to, like, stop this and go quickly write a song about, like, race relations in Ferguson or something like that? Like, she is a dumb pop star who is making dumb pop music for dumb people like me, apparently, to listen to.
Yeah.
And she should not have to... It annoys me.
Those should not be two things that were considered in the same breath. They are unrelated facts. It's
like
if you got mad at somebody for, like, eating Cheetos at the same time that speech was going on. Like, that, those are two unrelated incidents.
Like, people were tweeting pictures of, like, you know, stills from the video where she was, like, dancing or whatever. And, like, then, like, captioned it, like, you know, glad your life is so great. And then, like, hashtag Ferguson and stuff like that. It's like, no.
Stop that.
So that was the first
Beyond
time
that
I had to come to her defense.
Americans apparently have no room for a sense of humor left whatsoever.
Right.
Because her video just features her parodying a bunch of other music videos, basically.
Yes.
And in the video, there is some twerking, as you might imagine, a video parodying current trends in music videos would have.
Her crawling under some people
who are twerking.
Who were twerking. A mixed race bag of twerkers.
Yes.
Apparently that is not allowed.
Right. This is getting likened to, like, Miley Cyrus-style, like, objectification of African-American women. And that is not what this is.
Right. And the whole point of everything that she was doing in that video was to sort of, like, it wasn't to mock those things. It was to show that she is sort of, like, herself uncomfortable putting herself in, like...
In any of those situations.
In any of those situations of, like,
it also
the classic recent pop star
dancing in
trends.
Swan Lake.
Right, exactly.
She's not a good Swan Lake
dancer.
She's not a ballerina. She's not sorry about that.
She's not a ballerina.
She's not a modern dancer.
She is in, like, a crazy sort of almost, like, Gaga-type face mask or whatever that she's sort of, like, ripped
off at one
point.
That's another area that she's not a...
So, like, and also, like, you know, I think that people were sort of, like, the last person that she sort of, like, looks up at, like, who she's under or whatever is, like, one of the African-Americans in the thing. And I was, like, I was having a discussion with a coworker and I said, would you have preferred that all of the twerkers been white?
Right, like, that's
because
also...
Because that wasn't the way to go. Maybe that whole scene was just potentially, maybe not...
It wasn't
the way
to go. A genius plan, perhaps.
Like, could she have just, like, sort of, like, you know, laughingly twerked herself and, right. like, been like, oh, look, I can't twerk.
But even, sort of like, that like, was... The whole point of that scene is to parody the sort of other white pop stars that are in yes. earnest, you know, like, taking, co-opting this
co-opting
move.
Co-opting those things. And she is not trying to do that. And that was the whole point.
And she's purposely not doing that, and that is the whole point of the scene. So, like, it's... You can't... You gotta have a sense of context if you're gonna go on a politically correct rampage. I understand why people were upset about what Miley Cyrus was up to with her twerking right. business. She was like spanking African American women right. in a live performance on MTV. Like yeah. I get why that was offensive, and that you know, I understand why that sparked a discussion about yeah. this sort of like co-opting of twerking and like whether you know how it can be done. You know, in good or bad taste right. or whatever it was. Well, this was not what that was, though. No. This was just a parody of a lot right. of... And this was a parody video, and it wasn't a parody of any of the styles of dance or anything. It was literally a parody of herself.
Right. And the other thing that sort of, like, is annoying about
she
this...
She says to pretend that that's not a trend right now in music right. videos. It is.
Well, right.
It's and the only trend.
Right. Because the other video that basically, like, broke the internet this week was the Nicki Minaj Anaconda video. And I am not one to sort of, like, get on people's cases for, like, acting like an adult woman because, like, Nicki Minaj right. can sort of, like, do whatever she wants. But, like, that song is really foul. And, like, Nicki Minaj has sort of, like, in the past fashioned herself as sort of, like, a broad pop star who has even sort of, like, you know, I mean, lest we forget, you know, five-year-old girls, like, singing Super Bass on Ellen. I mean, like, so... Like, let's pick what we're going to get mad at.
Right.
I mean, if we're going to get mad at anything, I would right. say we like, shouldn't be mad at any of
let's
this
not
because,
worry.
Like, everyone should just, like, handle it. And if you're a parent who has a problem with this, then you should parent.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, like, don't get mad at Taylor Swift here. Like, let's focus our energies on
she has
the right things.
Here's what the issue with Taylor Swift is. She has a little bit of the Anne Hathaway complex where she looks.
Well, that's why I don't like her.
That's why no one likes. Yeah. yeah. She looks very earnest. She sort of, like, innocently does things that are kind of obnoxious
yeah.
and doesn't, I don't think, realize it. She's just sort of, like, she's suffering from her own self.
Absolutely.
Her own personality is sort of just, like, something that people, that sort of rubs people the wrong way a lot of the time, in yeah. the way that Anne Hathaway has that problem.
Yeah.
Because that's, and it's the same, like, it finally struck me. I was like, who does Taylor Swift remind
yeah,
me of?
That's
and
it.
It's not her wonderful acting skills that make me, her, but she's, you know, a sort of, like, at least savvy sort of person in to you know
sure.
Taylor Swift is savvy if we,
yeah.
we I don't know if she's like a fun person to talk to. I don't know if she's intelligent makes intelligent conversation, but she's very savvy and she's got all of these other things that she really does quite well in terms of like creating appeal for herself, and she just like she's just like got that annoying grating earnest quality
yeah. I don't
that
think
works
you probably
her.
Would be able to have a great conversation. I read
no.
that we I don't know if you read the whole thing, but I read that op-ed that she wrote about the future of pop music for the Wall
oh,
Street Journal.
Oh yeah, it was not
I'm pretty certain that she wrote herself, which was her mistake because
right.
it was not the
if
writings
if you're famous you hire someone else
right,
to write
it was
to.
Not the it was not the writings of an you know freakishly genius person.
No,
I mean
no.
it was the ramblings of a dumb 20-year-old blonde
yeah.
pop star.
Well,
I mean,
that's
anyway.
That's what she is. But I mean, like, it's yeah. it's like too, like, she sort of suffers from her own annoyingness.
Yeah, she does.
Because she's savvy in certain ways and, like, so yeah. unsavvy in other ways.
To say she's suffering is hardly fair.
Well, she's not suffering. she's suffering in terms of our perceptions
right,
of her.
Right, exactly.
She's not yeah. suffering in a personal way at
yeah.
all. And finally, we have the most important news of the week, which is that Justin Bieber challenged the president to do the ice bucket challenge.
Yeah.
Speaking of Taylor Swift, though, there was a New York Magazine chart, like, flow chart of, like, ice celebrity ice bucket challengees, and, like, Oprah
yeah.
was the center of one, and Taylor Swift was the center of the other. Taylor Swift got some interesting mileage out of her.
Yeah, her tree was...
Her tree extended into some weird places.
Right, it went all the way to...
Nicole Kidman was in her tree.
Yeah.
Like, Will Arnett was in her tree. Like, some bizarre choices
yeah.
all around. So... A lot of the cast of that 70s show also in her tree.
Interesting.
Yeah. Somebody, she challenged Jamie King, who challenged Topher Grace, who then challenged a bunch
yeah.
of that 70s show
sure.
people. It's
yeah.
weird that Topher Grace came up before any of the other that 70s show people, because
yeah,
he's
right?
done.
Not, he's not working.
Where's he? Like, what's he up to?
yeah.
It's a mystery. In any case, that's the news this week. We
yeah.
held out the most important news until the very end. Our schedule is probably going to get a little wonky. Maybe
right,
not next
leaving.
Week, but the week after, because I'm going to be around, you know, in and around various places.
Right.
But we will get you podcasts. It's Labor Day.
Yeah.
We'll get you podcasts as they come to us.
Yeah.
And at some point in the next couple weeks, we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming.
Yes.
So
have a good week.
Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week at some point.
Bye.
Bye.